All right, so let's jump into a case today that's both legally fascinating and I think hits close to home. For anyone thinking about a state law and, planning for the future and all that, it's a Florida case, Wilson v. Wilson. And it really makes you think about what property means, especially when we're talking about something as sensitive as, human remains.
Yeah, it's interesting. This case kind of throws us right into a clash between the way the law usually works, in a very practical sense, and then the emotional realities of family disputes.
Absolutely. And to really kind of put this in perspective picture, this a young man, just 23 years old, dies tragically in a car accident. And there's no will, no instructions about what should happen to his remains. His divorced parents, who are the legal representatives of his estate, essentially the ones in charge of his affairs, agree to cremation. So far, so good, right? Seems simple enough.
Yeah, it seems pretty straightforward.
But that's where the agreement ends. The father wants to divide the ashes, keep half in Florida and send the other half to family in Georgia. The mother, however, objects to this for religious reasons. So suddenly it goes from this like very simple decision to a full-blown legal battle. And the father actually took this to court, arguing that his son's ashes should be treated just like any other piece of property under Florida law, and therefore he had the right to divide them.
Yeah, and it raises this huge question that's at the core of the whole case. Can we and should we consider human remains as property in the eyes of the law?
And the initial trial court said, no, ashes are not property. But that wasn't the end of it.
Of course not. This is just the beginning.
The father appealed. And that's where it gets, I think, really interesting for those of you listening who are thinking about going into law, the future lawyers out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the appeals court had to look back at literally centuries of legal precedent to figure out how to rule on this very, very unique case.
Yeah, they had to go way back, all the way back to Sir William Blackstone, that influential 18th century legal scholar. And, Blackstone argued that there's no right to own a corpse at all. And that idea had a huge impact on how Western law developed, even to this day.
It's amazing how this very specific, very personal case can send us all the way back to the foundation of legal thinking.
Oh, absolutely.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And, the Florida court didn't just stop at Blackstone. They also pointed to their own state's legal history, highlighting cases like State v. Powell and Kirksey v. Jernigan, which both kind of affirmed that the next of kin has the right to bury the deceased, but not to actually own the
So
remains.
there's this pattern emerging, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like a long line of legal thinking saying this is not how we treat human remains.
So the father's facing this pretty strong historical argument against his claim, but he doesn't give up. He argued that Florida's definition of property is broad enough to cover ashes. Legally speaking, property is anything that can be owned, right? And he believed he should have the right to own his son's ashes. What do you think about that argument?
Well, the court wasn't really swayed. They acknowledged his point, but they emphasized that the weight of legal history was just too significant to ignore. They weren't going to overturn centuries of precedent based on a technicality in the definition of property. But it is fascinating, though, that they didn't dismiss the father's, emotional concerns entirely. They recognized that dividing the ashes might seem like a very practical solution, even a compassionate one, on the surface at least.
Yeah, I can see how that would be such a tough thing to balance. You've got the practical considerations, mo the father's wishes, and then the mother's very deeply held religious beliefs, all tangled up in this very complex legal situation.
And it seems like the court really wrestled with this, trying to weigh the practical aspects of the case against the emotional and spiritual dimensions, all while trying to stay grounded in these legal principles that, had been established for centuries.
So how did they finally resolve this? Did they side with the father and his desire to divide the ashes or uphold the mother's objections?
Well, this is where it gets even more interesting. They decided that it wasn't their call to make. They essentially said, hey, establishing a new policy on this is a job for the legislature, not for the courts. We're not gonna, step into this and create a brand new rule.
I can understand that. And it's such a huge policy decision with potentially far-reaching consequences. You don't want to decide something like that lightly based on a single case.
And they kind of acknowledge their limitations, sticking to their role as interpreters of existing law rather than, creators of policy. But it does throw a spotlight on this gap in Florida law. There's not much specific guidance on how to handle these disputes over cremated remains. And that leads us to another kind of twist in this case.
Oh, tell me more.
So the father tried to use another case to bolster his argument. This one was from out of state in re-estate of KA, and in that case, the ashes actually were divided.
So does that contradict what the Florida court was saying?
Not necessarily. This is where legal nuance, you know, really comes into play. The Florida court distinguished KA by pointing out that it was about the sentimental value of the ashes, not about property rights.
Okay.
Even in KA, they don't consider the ashes to be like inheritable property, you know, like a house or a car.
Wait, so is that a real difference or just a technicality? What's the practical distinction between sentimental value and a property right?
That's a great question, and it highlights how courts have to make these very fine distinctions in cases like these. The Florida court is basically saying, you know, having a strong emotional attachment to something doesn't automatically mean you have a legally recognized property right over it.
So where does all of this leave us? What are the key takeaways for our listeners, especially for those of you who are, you know, aspiring lawyers out there?
Well, I think Wilson v. Wilson really sets a clear precedent in Florida. The courts are hesitant to classify human remains as property, period. They're really sticking with this idea that the focus should be on ensuring a respectful burial or handling of remains, not on who gets to own them.
It sounds like this case is full of valuable lessons for future lawyers.
Oh, absolutely. One thing that really stands out to me is how crucial it is to encourage clients to put their final wishes in writing. You know, having a clear plan in place, even if it's just a simple document, can help families avoid these incredibly emotionally charged legal battles down the road.
It seems like this case goes way beyond just a dispute between two parents. It raises all these questions about the very nature of property, the role of the courts, and even how our legal system grapples with these changing social norms around death and remembrance.
Yeah, you're hitting on something really important here, and it's a case with a lot of layers, and we've really only just begun to peel them back. So when we come back, we'll explore some of the broader implications of Wilson v. Wilson and what it might mean for the future of estate planning in a world where cremation is, you know, becoming more and more common.
All right. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Wilson v. Wilson.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We were just talking about how this case highlights that gap in Florida law when it comes to, you know, disputes over cremains.
Right.
And how important it is for people to really spell out their final wishes.
Exactly.
And it makes me think, does the whole idea of pre-need arrangements, you know, where people plan out their funeral arrangements and what they want to happen to their remains in advance.
Right.
Does that solve the problem? Does Florida law even address that?
That's a great question. And you're right to bring it up. Florida actually does have a statute that allows people to designate a pre-need guardian. And this guardian is specifically given the authority to handle funeral arrangements and the disposition of remains.
So it seems like that could help avoid these kinds of disputes between family members.
Right. In theory, it should.
So are cases like Wilson v. Wilson totally avoidable if people just plan ahead?
Well, unfortunately, it's not always that simple.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Even with a pre-need guardian in place, you can still run into complications.
Like what?
Well, what happens if the instructions that the deceased person left are kind of vague or open to interpretation?
Okay, yeah.
Or what if family members just decide to challenge the guardian's decisions in court, even when the guardian is following, you know, the instructions to the letter?
So even the best laid plans can go awry.
That's right, especially when you're dealing with something as complex as death and family dynamics.
Absolutely.
I think what Wilson v. Wilson really shows us is that the law, especially in this very sensitive area, it just can't anticipate every possible scenario.
Right.
There's always room for interpretation, disagreement, legal challenges.
And that's where, I guess, good lawyering comes in.
Exactly. That's where y'all come in.
So with that in mind, what advice would you give to future lawyers who might find themselves, you know, dealing with these kinds of very emotionally charged cases?
Well, I think the first and most important thing is to remember that these cases aren't just about legal principles. You know, they involve real people who are grappling with very real grief and loss.
Yeah, of course.
So approaching these situations with sensitivity and empathy, I think, is absolutely essential.
That makes sense.
You're dealing with families at a very vulnerable time, and, you know, just a little bit of a delicate touch can go a long way.
So true. But practically speaking, what are some legal strategies that, you know, lawyers can employ in these situations?
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that Florida law is pretty clear that ashes aren't property.
Right.
So trying to argue for a simple division based on, you know, ownership rights probably isn't going to fly.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think a more effective approach might be to kind of shift the focus away from property and more towards intent.
Intent.
Yeah, even if there wasn't like a formal written document, You know, were there any clues about the deceased person's wishes? Right. Maybe conversations with loved ones, letters, or even just their general values and belief that could shed light on how they wanted their remains handled.
So it sounds like a lawyer in this situation almost has to become like a detective.
Yeah.
Piecing together these intentions from a lot of different sources.
That's a great way to put it. It requires really strong communication and investigative skills.
Wow.
You might need to interview family members, friends, even clergy, to really build a comprehensive picture of what the deceased person wanted.
So it takes a lot more than just, you know, legal expertise.
Yeah.
You need emotional intelligence, strong interpersonal skills.
Absolutely. And that's what makes these cases so challenging, but also, I think, so deeply meaningful.
Right.
Because you're not just dealing with abstract legal concepts. You're really dealing with the human side of the law.
Mm-hmm.
You're helping families navigate these very difficult situations and honor the memory of their loved ones.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of the human side of things, this case got me thinking about the bigger picture. Cremation's becoming more and more common these days, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So do you think we're likely to see more cases like Wilson v. Wilson popping up in the future?
It's definitely a trend to watch, you know, as cremation rates continue to rise and as family structures become more and more complex.
Right.
With blended families, second marriages, and all that.
Right.
I think we're bound to see more and more disputes over, you know, what to do with cremains.
It's like the law is constantly playing catch up.
Exactly. And that raises some really interesting questions, like, should the law even treat cremains differently than traditional burials?
Mm.
Should there be specific laws that directly address these kinds of disputes? You know, these are all issues that lawmakers and legal scholars are really grappling with right now.
So Wilson v. Wilson has kind of opened up this whole can of worms, so to speak.
It really has. And it reminds us that the law is this living, breathing thing. You know, it's always evolving and adapting to new situations. Huh. What was considered settled law, you know, just a few decades ago, might be completely up for debate today. And that's what makes this field so dynamic and so intellectually stimulating.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It's fascinating to see how a single case can spark such wide-ranging discussions about our values, our beliefs, even the very nature of life and death.
For sure.
But beyond these philosophical questions, Wilson v. Wilson also has some very practical implications for how lawyers approach estate planning, right?
Oh, absolutely. So. But before we jump into that, I think there's another layer to this case that's worth exploring, and that's the impact of technology on our understanding of death and remembrance.
You know, we've been talking a lot about how Wilson v. Wilson really exposes this tension between, you know, these evolving social norms and established legal precedent.
Yeah.
But it also got me thinking about the role technology plays in all this.
Oh, that's an excellent point. How do you see technology fitting into this whole thing?
Well, I mean, think about it. We live in a time where technology is constantly pushing the boundaries. Yeah. Like, think about digital avatars, virtual memorials.
Yeah.
You know, even the potential to, like, recreate a person's personality using AI.
Right.
Seems like science fiction, but it's becoming more and more real every day.
Yeah. It's remarkable how technology is really changing our relationship with, you know, life and death, offering these new ways to remember and even connect with those who have passed away.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So how does this tie back to Wilson v. Wilson and all the issues we've been talking about with ashes and property rights and all that?
Well, it raises some really profound questions about what we even consider human remains.
Hmm.
You know, if someone's memories, their personality, their essence can be preserved digitally, does that change the significance of their physical ashes?
It's almost like we're moving towards this future mm-hmm. where the physical body matters less and a person's digital footprint takes on this whole new level of importance.
Yeah, that's a really insightful observation. And, you know, this shift could have huge implications for the law. Well, if someone's digital legacy becomes their primary form of existence, how do we protect it? Who gets to control it? Who inherits it?
It's like we're heading into this completely uncharted territory.
Exactly.
With a whole new set of legal and ethical dilemmas to tackle.
Precisely. And while Wilson v. Wilson specifically dealt with, you know, those physical ashes, I think it foreshadows these much larger questions that we're going to be grappling with more and more as technology keeps advancing.
So what guidance would you offer to our listeners, you know, especially those future lawyers out there, as they prepare to navigate this constantly evolving legal landscape?
Well, I think the key is to be adaptable.
Okay.
To be open to new ideas and challenges.
Right.
Because the law is not static. It's constantly changing. And the pace of change is only going to accelerate in this digital age.
So it's not enough to just memorize precedents and statutes.
Right.
Lawyers need to be able to think critically, anticipate future trends and apply, you know, legal principles to situations that we might not even be able to imagine right now.
Absolutely. The best lawyers aren't just legal scholars, they're forward thinkers, always looking ahead and trying to understand, you know, the implications of new technologies and these huge social shifts that are happening.
Well, to wrap up our deep dive into Wilson v. Wilson, it's clear that this case goes so far beyond just this simple dispute over ashes.
Right.
It touches on these really fundamental issues like property rights, family dynamics, religious beliefs, and the evolving nature of death and remembrance in the 21st century.
And it really highlights how crucial the role of lawyers will be in shaping the legal landscape as we navigate, you know, all of these increasingly complex issues.
We've covered a lot of ground today, but as with any good deep dive, we've only just scratched the surface.
That's right.
Wilson v. Wilson is a case that will stay with you long after you finish listening, you know, prompting you to consider these big questions and the challenges that lie ahead.
Thanks for joining us on this fascinating exploration. Keep those legal minds sharp, and remember, the future of law is in your hands.